Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drinks Show this week. As always, friends, definitely appreciate it. Yep. Hey, we're going to jump right into it here pretty quick. We got a good show coming up for you here today. We are going to truck on over to Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, one of my very favorite spots. And that's where we taped the show yesterday, if you're listening on the radio there on Sunday. And we're talking about the world of sour beers. That's right, sour beers. Our good friends, Sal Mortilaro, certified beer judge, and Matt Horney, also a certified beer judge, as well as the brewmaster there at Old Rail Brewing, come on the show as they usually do whenever we talk about beers. And I was really excited to do a show talking about sour beers. I love sour beers. Now, sour beers, or sour, is kind of, it's not really an official category or style, if you will. It's essentially a catch-all term that people use. Different ways to make beer sour. Of course, there's some very traditional styles that are out there. Lambics come to mind, for example. Flanders Red. And then there's some contemporary stuff. We even taste a couple that Matt brought where we have beers that are soured and, are aged in wine casks. One in Cabernet Sauvignon barrels and one in Pinot Noir barrels. And actually, one of the interesting things, if you go back a bit over a century ago before pasteurization and some of these other considerations, sterile conditions, really probably all beers were sour because wild yeasts would intrude in the process, and that's one way and part of how this all works. But we get pretty far into this stuff talking about the world of sour beers. Those guys, we taste a whole bunch. It's a lot of fun. Be sure, if you are listening here on the radio, to get the podcast. It'll be out tomorrow on Tuesday, because that's where we always do our podcast only extended conversation, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. Sal and Matt stick around. We taste through a bunch of sour beers through the show, but we also taste two or three in the Another Shot portion, and one of those is one that Sal actually made that we tasted, something that he meddled for at a home brewing competition. So some pretty interesting stuff there. And we taste some of the classic styles and some of the famous ones and some, like I mentioned, the two aged in wine barrels and so on and so forth. So some really interesting stuff. It's a fascinating world of sour beer out there. Yes, it is. Very refreshing, I think. And goes good with food, many of them, I think. Anyway, so there you go. That's this week's show. A couple programming notes. Oh, I wanted to mention one other thing real quick in regards. If you want to catch us on social media, which I always love that you do that, it's at NOLA Drinks on Instagram and Facebook and at NOLA Drinks 1 on Twitter. But we've started doing an IGTV segment there on Instagram, and we will have one up, one of the segments where we kind of give an overview of what sour beers are. We videoed that back in the brewery at Old Rail Brewing Company, and you can catch that there on our Instagram channel. Yeah, that's right, at NOLA Drinks on Instagram. Check out IGTV. That episode will be up shortly. It'll be up tomorrow on Tuesday if you're listening on the radio. If you're hearing the podcast, hopefully it's there already. One other quick programming note. Next week, friends, we're going to be taking the week off. Yep, need a little bit of a brain break. Don't mind. Hope you don't mind. But we're going to take, just a little bit of a one-week breather. We'll be back with a new show on the radio on October 15th. And all kinds of great stuff coming up, too, on future shows to be on the lookout for, friends. All right, we're going to send it right over to Old Rail Brewing Company, talking sour beers. All right, everybody, we're here at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, right here off the Trace. And as always, pleased to be joined by my friends Matt Horney and Sal Mortilaro, unpaid beer correspondents, as we like to say. Gentlemen, welcome. Matt, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for having us and stopping by and you know, it's a pleasure to host this again in the brewery. I'm really excited about this.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And Sal, sir, always good to see you.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us again. Say it's unpaid, but we sure get some beer out of it. So
I'm a fan of that. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But you guys brought the beer too, so it's totally, you guys are coming out on the short end of the stick on this one. But I'm reaping the benefits. But hey, Matt, since we're kind of teeing this up just briefly, we're actually, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to talk about sour beers and kind of what that means and so on and so forth. But you guys here at Old Rail Brewing Company, as I mentioned, in Old Mandeville, great place to visit. You can only get the beers here. Mm-hmm. You guys are celebrating your fifth anniversary.
Yes, we celebrated the fifth anniversary in July 17th. It's pretty cool. It's a big milestone for us for being a brew pub and one of the few brew pubs in the state. So it's pretty awesome. We had a celebration. We had some glasses that we gave away, looking forward to 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
So, very good, man. Right on. We'll get that 10th anniversary glass going, right?
Right.
Cool. And Sal, so you had a cool experience as well recently. You had the
the honor and privilege and experience of judging at the Great American Beer Festival in Colorado, right?
I did. It was my first year doing it.
About
289 judges from the entire world. For those who are not familiar, the Great American Beer Fest is held at Denver, Colorado every year. It's considered kind of the Super Bowl of beers. There were 8,700 entries from mainly the United States that were judged by the 300 some odd judges over several days.
It's not limited to American beers, though. There's international beers can be submitted as well.
This Great American Beer Fest is American breweries only. The judges are international.
Gotcha. Okay.
I was one of 30 to get picked of new judges, so it was an honor. It was a real great experience.
Now, how does that work? Does that work through the BJCP, the Beer Judging Certification Program, exclusively, or they can kind of draw from wherever?
They do draw from wherever. Mainly, these are going to be industry folks, a lot of well-known brewers, a lot of well-known industry rep people. The BJCP represents a small percentage of judges out of the 300. There were probably about 15, I would say, BJCP judges total out of almost the 300 there.
Cool. So now, and I'm assuming that it kind of goes to like a wine competition or that sort of thing, right? You're going to be broken up into groups and then given certain categories to judge, correct?
Correct. That's absolutely correct. I can't disclose what styles that I judged because we want to keep that that anonymity and the true process. However, though, we do get to pick the styles. We do get to favor our styles, and I definitely did get to judge some of my favorite styles that I consider to be some of my go-to beers that I drink a lot of and have a very good concept of what they should taste and smell and appear like.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this question, Matt. Can you submit beers from here to something like that?
Yes.
You can.
Yeah.
So it's not just off-premise.
Yeah, we've entered the World Beer Cup, which is the international version of the Great American Beer Festival. Competition-wise.
Okay.
We've entered the Great American Beer Festival, and there's a couple other ones, the U.S. Open Beer Championship and the Best of Craft Beer Awards in Bend, Oregon. So those are some of the ones that we've entered, and there's a lot more out there, too. There's some county fairs in California that you can enter. There's barley wine competitions and some other things. So there's all sorts of competitions.
Gotcha. Yeah, sure. Now, are these when generally, and I know that they vary to some degree, like, say, at the Great American Beer Festival, so category meaning style, right? And then do they break it down further, say by price point or anything like that, or is it pretty much just
style? They do not. It's 100% to style.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, and you also got to hobnob with quite a few people. I saw some pictures on who was the tall guy that I saw on Facebook.
I did. So the tall guy, it was actually really surreal. I really dorked out a lot of these big. No,
you
really,
fanboyed?
Like,
you
I very much so. A lot of these guys that you hear about, Charlie Papazian, who wrote a lot of books, very famous homebrewing books, kind of got me started in it. I got to see Tommy Arthur, who is the brewmaster at Lost Abbey, a very well known, sour beer production, along with some other stuff. But the tall guy was actually the guy who truly got me started. Aaron used to own the local homebrew shop down in New Orleans, Brewstock. So I bought my first homebrew kit. So he's kind of responsible for this whole mess.
Okay, cool. Because I saw that on Facebook, and I you said, like, look who I ran into, and it was one of those posts. I'm like, is that somebody that I should know from the beer world? I didn't know who it was.
A bunch of people who knew, you know, recognized him. He is now living in New Zealand, selling a particular brew-related product.
Awesome.
So.
Very cool. Well, you guys, let's do this. We're gonna take a little break here on the show, and when we come back, we're going to get into our topic of the day, which is sour beers. We're going to let you know a little bit about what that is, what that isn't, and really, it's just kind of a catch-all term, so we're going to explain that to you as well, and then we're going to taste some stuff as well. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to talk sour beers. Come on back. Good job.
Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, the second annual South African Wine Week returns to New Orleans from November 7th through the 13th. Explore this fascinating wine region, one of my favorites, that produces truly excellent wines all at a great value. Some of your favorite bars, restaurants, and bottle shops around the metro area will host dinners, happy hours, special tastings, and more. Join the conversation online using the hashtag SAWineWeek. To get more information and see event listings, visit SAWineWeekNOLA.com. Cheers, y'all.
Muffaletta Fest celebrates Italian culture and heritage Sunday, October 7th on Frisco Avenue in Old Metairie. Come hungry and enjoy the unique muffaletta sandwich and many other Italian-American specialty foods and delicacies, plus music, cooking demonstrations, and so much more. Admission is free, and for more information, visit muffalettafest.com. That's muffalettafest.com.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Naming a star is perfect for birthdays, romance, or memorializing a loved one. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, you'll receive this timeless gift. We'll record the new star name in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. For over 40 years, we've named 3 million stars for royalties, celebrities, and individuals worldwide. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333, or visit StarRegistry.com for the ultimate gift.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project, and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. How much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app. HomeAdvisor.
At Grace at the Green Light, we believe that everyone deserves a hot meal, a welcoming community, and the chance to go home again. Every month, our Meals with Love program feeds thousands of homeless New Orleanians, while our Going Home initiative sends people who are homeless here home to loved ones across the country. You can help create a new home and hope for those who need it most. To see how, visit our website at www.graceatthegreenlight.org.
Have you simply had enough breakfast? Push yourself away from the table and relax. Now there's a Beatles music show for the music connoisseur. A show that proves the Beatles were the best band ever. They were influenced by hundreds of artists who came before them and continue to have an effect on the music of today. It's called Beatles-A-Rama, The Show, and it airs every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. on WGSO 990 AM. I'm Pat Matthews, and it's good to be back in my hometown. Join me every Sunday morning as we break the breakfast habit together.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be, and also IGTV. Yeah, we're here at Old Rail Brewing Company, friends, and we are talking about sour beers with Matt and Sal. We're sitting back here in the brewery. Guys, let's, Matt, I'll start with you. Sour beer is a term that we kind of use out of convenience, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of an umbrella term. It covers a lot of different categories. It covers so much. I mean, there's so many different things that can go on with sours, and just the bacteria and the yeast and all the things of that nature, the barrel aging and all that, and the methods that you use. And not everything, you know, we were talking about this earlier, not everything's always sour. It's a lot of other things.
Well, and explain that, Sal.
So to kind of piggyback off of Matt a little bit, sour is a general term, right? There's malty beers, there's hoppy beers, there's yeasty, yeast-forward beers. Sour definitely covers a very, the term sour definitely covers a very wide depth of very specific flavors that come out of it.
But different styles in many cases made in different ways, correct?
Correct. Right, yeah. With the BJCP, there's European sours, which may cover things such as Lambic, Goose, Berliner Weisses, Flanders Reds, Oud Bruins, and then there's also the American Wild Sours, which are going to cover certain made here in America, not traditional methods, but still using traditional methods, but not those protected designation origins,
right?
And wild fermented type things. There's a couple of different styles of the American Wild Sours. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Matt, let's talk about this, because we go back not too long ago, a few decades ago, really, and
And really all beers are probably sour to some degree, right? Because
yeah.
Wild yeast intrusion, is that correct?
Yeah. And that goes back, I mean, you can use the example of the IPA, the India Pale Ale, and hopping it to such high rates that it wouldn't contaminate or wouldn't go bad during its transit to kind of the, you know, to the Indian territories or okay. of the British. But yeah, it traditionally it would be kind of funky. Like beers today wouldn't taste anything remotely like
because we're talking about things made in sterile conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And then in this case, we're probably talking about maybe some deliberate brewery yeast, but then also some wild yeah. yeast intrusion. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure. And back then there was no stainless vats. There was no you know, like we have here. Everything's welded perfectly and sealed perfectly, and that didn't exist back then. So it was right. kind of subject to whatever was in the air, you know.
So, but, mm-hmm. like Sal, when we're talking about lambic, right, which is kind mm-hmm. of a style that maybe people would associate there and know
sure.
and have heard of, that whole process, right, is deliberately wild fermentation in the traditional method of making it, right? You're using cool ships; it's outside.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. So how does that? I mean, that's kind of. And so what we're talking about here is that it's hard to control, right, or can be a little bit more fraught with some amount of risk.
Well, it is hard to control, but you let there's a saying that, and I think we covered this before, maybe the last show, that brewers make wort and yeast, or in this case, bacteria make beer. Mm-hmm. There's different stages of fermentation in these particular beers, especially the lambics, where there's a very back and forth struggle in between the wild bacteria and then the yeast itself. There are certain phases that certain things are a little more prevalent in the mash or in the wort, I'm sorry. Then the yeast take over and then the bacteria come back, and it's a very back and forth struggle. So
okay.
they are hard. You are dealing with a very wild organism. At least with today's beers, you have very specific, very clean strains of yeast, Saccharomyces yeast, that you more or less know what they're going to do under the right conditions, right?
Okay, sure.
You know how they're going to act. But a lot of these wild Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, Lactobacillus that we'll get into, they definitely kind of do their own thing. They can be controlled, absolutely. I mean, there's these houses that make these great beers, but sometimes it's just...
So like temperature matters, right? So if you're doing this outside in cool ships, temperature mm-hmm. can kind of play
sure.
some tricks
mm-hmm.
and stuff
sure.
and that yeah. sort of thing. Right?
The season matters, actually.
And, right, absolutely. Yeah.
Traditionally, these beers in true traditional lambics brewed in Peyotenland area of Belgium, the brewing season is October to May. So... absolutely, the temperature, and they pick that because of the temperature. Also, what's kind of being gusts through the air at that time
for both fermentation right, and also correct. Aging too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So you said something really interesting, Matt, before we started on the mm-hmm. air here, that it's some of the sour beers, not all necessarily, but some in particular are kind of like the wine of beers, mm-hmm. or maybe even really kind of like the scotch of beers.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because when these beers are made, like if you're a brewer, you're just dealing straight from, you know, your boil kettle to fermenter to keg bottle serving tank and such. When you start getting into the nuances of sour brewing or you know, brewing with all these different kind of microbes and such, then you start getting into barrel fermentations and things like that, to where each barrel can vary.
Mm-hmm.
It can have its own character. It can develop differently. It might ferment faster or slower. When you get into that, then you get into blending. So then you're sampling every barrel, seeing what its nuances, its characteristics are, and then blending barrel to barrel and trying to dial in the flavor so it's
that
consistent.
You're looking for. Yeah,
yeah, it's right. not too acidic, or it's gonna, you know, one flavor is not outpacing another.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we find, guys, that with some of these beers, and because of what you just described, Matt, that they are gonna vary, say from run to run or year to year, because there is gonna be that kind of variation? Yeah.
Correct. There's several video interviews with bring up Cantillon, Jean Van Roy.
So these are lambics in Belgium,
yes,
we're talking about.
Yes. Where he talks about it's, hey, year to year, it's a living organism. And there is going to be variation between batch and batch.
Mm-hmm. And you'll probably start seeing that more with, as you know, climate change occurs and things start happening in the natural environment, that's going to affect those brewers.
That window being able to do as you were describing.
Matt makes a good point because actually in one of the interviews that I'm familiar with, he's getting interviewed, John Van Roy is, and said, how does this beer differ from what, you know, happened when your great-grandfather opened it up in 1900? And he said, not really much. And he even says, except for maybe the environment has changed, the climate has changed. So, Matt's absolutely correct.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So when people, let's go down this direction briefly here because we got about 2.5 minutes left, guys, before we have to end the IGTV segment. But so I think a lot of people throw that term Brett Brettanomyces around quite a bit, and they sort of say, well, any beer that's sour has Brett going on. You got anything with Brett in it? I hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a misnomer.
Correct.
Yep.
Any sour beer is going to have lactobacillus in it. It's going to maybe have pediococcus in it, a couple others, but those are the most well-known. Brettanomyces is not really a souring bacteria. Really, it's a yeast. Brettanomyces, to be real specific, is a yeast. It's not a souring yeast. Brettanomyces, Bruxellinalis, for example, Lombicus, produces these very earthy barnyard petting zoo leather style flavors, whereas something like Brettanomyces animalis is going to produce these very pineapple, tropical, very, very bizarre, which you would consider for a quote-unquote sour beer, a very bizarre thing. One of the more well-known Trappist beers is with the fish on it. It's the only one of the only Trappist beers. They use Brettanomyces in it.
Okay, they do.
The name will come to me in a minute. And Orvel Trappist. And very, very fruity, floral, pineapple. That's a Brett beer.
That's a Brett beer. Okay. Yep. And so, Matt, we got about a minute left before we're going to close this out. Tell people if they want to explore the world of sour beers, and we've kind of noted that there's different things. What would you tell them to look for? What would you maybe recommend? Where's a good place to start?
Oh, if you're in the United States, I would start with Russian River for sure. And there's some other places, you know, the brewery out in California as well. I mean, both these are out in California. But the brewery is a really great place. Russian River is a really great place.
And maybe as far as style. What would be a good style? Maybe that's not quite as challenging to the palate and that kind of thing.
As far as style, any Brett beer is probably going to be the most forgiving. It's not going to have acetic acid to give you like that vinegar kind of thing. Probably more of a Flanders-style beer.
Like a Flanders red style.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So some of those things are probably going to hit people kind of harsh if you get too acidic.
Okay.
But a Brett funky beer... is a good place to start. And for local breweries, I mean, Nola right down the street is a great place to start for some of those kind of styles.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, great, you guys. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to close out the IGTV segment, and then we're going to be back. Stick around for the podcast and the radio broadcast because we're going to taste some stuff and get further into sour beers. Friends, come on back. Mm-hmm. Back to the show. Brian Diaz here at WPSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Yeah, hey, well, we did just an IGTV segment, guys. We're sitting here with Matt and Sal talking beers, talking sour beers in particular. And the last segment, of course, aired on the podcast and the radio, but you can go check it out, IGTV on Instagram at NOLA Drinks. But we moved, guys. We moved because we were in the brewery, and now we're out here in the pub, Matt, and there's a reason for that.
There is.
We didn't just want to carry furniture for no particular reason.
No, we had to move everything out here. Yeah, I don't. It's the golden rule of my brewery is that I don't bring anything with potential contamination, microbes, Brettanomyces, anything of that nature, Pediococcus, keep it out of there.
That we were just talking about, because you can basically, the upshot here is you can screw up everything else, all the other beers you have going on in there.
Yeah, yeah. And some brewers will say that I'm overprotective or I'm a little paranoid, but I'd rather be safe than sorry.
All it takes is one jackass like me to spill a beer in the brewery, and then it's all over.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking, we don't have to name names, Sal, but this has actually happened before in certain breweries where contamination has taken place. Then you either got to sterilize the place or then you just become a sour beer maker, right?
Correct. There's particular breweries that either had to shut down for several months or they basically became sour farmhouse-style breweries because they got inoculated with these very virulent strains of Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, and that was a wrap, basically,
for them.
Well, if it tastes good, yeah, why not?
Tastes good.
Why not? Hey, there's an instant change in your business model. It's time to redo the business plan right away.
Yeah.
Well, so now we're going to taste through some stuff, you guys, and talk a little bit more about. We mentioned in the previous segment how everybody kind of, we use the term, and it's a term of convenience. Sour beers can mean really many different things. So we're going to taste through some different styles and get into a little further how they're made, because there are, as we noted previously, differences in actually how they're made. It's not just introducing one strand of yeast or one type of bacteria, and that's the world of sour beer. So what are we going to start with here, Sal? Tell us what we got first. Which one should we do, the cuvée?
So the first thing we're going to do, we can do the cuvée Saint-Jacobin. That is going to be a Flanders Red style beer. These are going to be cool shipped for a day, then added to the barrel to where the real inoculation takes place. Very lovely style beer. You're going to get some very dark fruit, dark cherries. Very wine-like, very reminiscent of those things. This is actually one of my favorite styles. A little bit of acetic vinegar, a little sharp on the vinegar, the sourness. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely beer.
It's a great beer. What do you think about it?
I think it's nice. I'm getting some woody notes on it, a little barrel kind of character, little oakiness.
That oakiness, that acetic acid is going to help dry this beer out, provide a nice finish on it.
It's good. Yeah, so I was just going to say, because it you have that very, the sort of sour fruit, sour cherry kind of note, tart cherry note up front, and you expect it's going to be kind of fruity, but it finishes very, very dry. Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of like a red wine, where it's, so you got almost like grippy tannins kind of thing. And I think what would be really interesting, I mean, I could see this being like a really good beer to drink with, say, like a pork loin. Because the acid will stand up, maybe like if you make it a little bit spicy, or if you do sort of like maybe a fruit glaze on it or something along those lines. But then it kind of finishes dry, so I think it would kind of play with the fat pretty nice on that too.
Yep, cut through that fat real nice. Yeah. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
So how is this one made? Like how in general? So you mentioned with the cool ships. So we're getting some wild yeast fermentation, right?
Correct.
Going on.
Correct.
And does it have like all three of what we were talking about before with the Brettanomyces and the Pediococcus and what's the other one? The Lactobacillus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This particular strain, this particular beer, I would say the strains. I don't pick up Brett in it, either the rose or the either on the nose or the flavor, the aroma or the flavor. Definitely going to be some acetic acid bacteria, acetobacteria. Lactic acid bacteria, lactobacillus, and maybe a little bit of pediococcus in there.
Okay. So, and this is, I love this one. I told you, you and I had tasted this one some months before. This is, the Flemish red, right? Is this a Flemish red?
It is.
This is an older style or older commercially produced style, correct, of sour beers?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think most of these Flanders beers go back a long time. I'm not sure on the specific dates of how far back, but they've been around for a while.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, and then we kind of have another one, a particular style that a lot of people out there probably know, the Lambic, and that, I say Lambic, but I guess Lambic's probably the right way to say it. Let's talk about that one.
So these particular styles, we touched on them on the IG video portion. These are going to be a true Lambic is going to be a protected designation of origin. It is brewed in Peyotenland around the Brussels area. Matt pointed out earlier only a 300-mile radius of Brussels.
So it's like an appellation in wine. We can consider it that way. You can't call it. People can make the style, but they can't call it a Lambic unless it's made.
It's sold in the United States, someone does an American, style. It is Lambic style.
Lambic style.
The way they make these are actually very unique in the brewing process. Without getting over technical, it uses up to 40% of raw wheat. They have to do a very particular mash called a turbid mash, where they have to go through. Modern day grain is modified. The raw wheat is not modified. So to keep it relatively simple, what they'll do is they'll take it through various rests. They'll also essentially constantly draw off and boil and add boiling water back to it. And then they'll what's called sparge with very hot water, 190 degrees, which is actually insane. You really want about 168 degrees sparge generally as your upper limits. Then they'll do a very long boil. And the fast version is that all of these things are going to be very indicative and very helpful to the Brettanomyces strains that are inoculated. It'll create a very dextrinous wort. Okay. More complex sugars that gives those Brettanomyces bacteria time.
Okay.
Because aging is a big thing in these beers.
Gotcha. And then, really, go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
The other thing, it's the aged hops.
Is
something that they use in that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Basically, it's just hops that have been kind of exposed to oxygen. In normal brewing circles, you don't want that. You store them nitrogen or vacuum sealed and try and purge them of all the oxygen you can. In these styles, it's kind of almost like they become like musty hops, mm-hmm. in a way.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, yeah, a little bit different.
Just so we're clear, too, on the lambic. So we are talking, it does use fruit. There is fruit in it, correct?
There are fruited lambics.
Yeah. But this is not that we're tasting.
This one is. This one is a creek or cherry. So there's actually three lambic breakoffs. A true lambic, which is a straight, very fresh beer. You don't find true lambics in the States very often.
Okay, so not made with fruit then in that
correct.
Instance. I didn't know that.
Then you have goose, which is a blend of 1, 2, and 3 year lambics, and then fruited lambics, which is what we're having right now.
Very interesting. So that's really all we see in this country, in the States, is the fruited lambics. Or we see goose here?
We do see goose.
Okay.
Not very common, but you do see goose. Tilquin goose is probably the most well-known here.
Gotcha. Very cool. This is also, it's really nice, and it has, I also like that, it's got that kind of tart cherry, but very, it's a little sweeter to me than the Cuvée de Jacobin, right?
Sure.
It's this is also just a nice sipper. It's kind of, you know, this is, I don't know, how would you enjoy this typically, Matt?
This one, I think typically there'd probably be a little bit more carbonation out of than we're experiencing.
Okay.
But to me, these kinds of beers, since it's a little sweeter, this would be more of like a after dinner kind of beer, something that I would enjoy after, given the sweetness and the fruity component of it. But one thing I do want to add about both these beers is the aroma. The aroma is very notable, and the one we were just talking about had that huge kind of a sour cherry thing going on in it. And this one, like we were talking, has that cough drop, the cherry cough drop
it
aroma.
It smells
too.
Like a Luden's, cough drop to a tea. In a very nice way. I used to love those, so I got no problem with that.
Yeah, you eat them like candy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, very, very delicious stuff. So, yeah, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here, and then we're going to come back. We're going to take just a couple more in the next segment. And then, as always, Matt and Sal are going to stick around for another Shot with Noel Drinks, our podcast-only portion of stuff, and we'll probably nerd out even further. Because, Sal, as you said, sour beer people, man, they're nerds.
They are some nerds.
Yeah, they're some nerds. So we're going to become who we are then. So we're going to do that in the podcast only portion. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back. Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, the second annual South African Wine Week returns to New Orleans from November 7th through the 13th. Explore this fascinating wine region, one of my favorites, that produces truly excellent wines all at a great value. Some of your favorite bars, restaurants, and bottle shops around the metro area will host dinners, happy hours, special tastings, and more. Join the conversation online using the hashtag SAWineWeek. To get more information and see event listings, visit sawineweeknola.com. Cheers, y'all.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in this week to the NOLA Drinks Show.
As always, friends, be sure to check us out on social media. Hey, we're at NOLA Drinks on Facebook, at NOLA Drinks on Instagram, where you can catch our IGTV episode that we just shot. That'll be there. If you're listening on the radio, that'll be there tomorrow. If you're listening on the podcast, probably there now. And, we're here at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, and we're chasing some sour beers with Matt and Sal, as you know. And, Matt, you brought a pretty special one. We were talking about how earlier how like it's sort of like the beer of wine of beer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's almost literal.
Yeah. It's true. So what we're having right now is the Russian River Consecration. I picked this up a couple years ago. This has been aged for about 3 years, and this is aged in Cabernet Sauvignon barrels, 100%, with some currants added. So,
wow.
You definitely get that wine note to it.
Yes.
It's really dry, and you get that alcohol warmth that kind of finishes it.
You definitely get, definitely some heat from the alcohol, and there's a very pleasant bitterness through the mid-palate and finish on this. This is it's very. I mean, it's actually it finishes quite bitter.
Yeah,
it's very pleasant that way. What do you think, Sal?
It's good beer. This is in the BJCP. This is a wild specialty beer. Okay. It's a little bit more fruit forward. You don't get too much of the barrel. But the alcohol is nice. I believe this particular beer comes in at 10% ABV. You definitely get some nice dark malts, that black currant note on it. It's a real treat. Anytime I see anything from Russian River, it's always good work.
That's a really good brewery. Yeah, no doubt. Now, is this something you guys, I think we're seeing this more, kind of broadening this, from the world of sour beers in general. We are seeing people start to introduce different casks, like aging stuff in wine or aging stuff in whiskey barrels more these days.
Yeah.
So this isn't something that was traditionally done right, or maybe it was.
I'm not really sure as far as the traditional kind of European stuff would go.
Okay.
I know it in kind of American sours and funky beers, it's pretty common. You see it a lot. So I don't know if that's more of like a new world thing or versus old world.
Go ahead, Sal.
Well, in Lambiques, they do get tend to sometimes age in woods, very much so the Flanders Reds. One of the interesting things is the reason we talked about the creation of the turbid mash makes those very long chain dextrins. These bacteria actually reside, I read an article, up to 8 millimeters down into the wood sometimes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When they're not feasting on long chain dextrins, they're actually feasting on the cellulose of the wood. Wood aging is a pretty traditional thing.
When you get into wine, though, I think that's where you're getting into the more new stuff. We have another one here from Russian River that we didn't open yet, and that's the Pinot Noir barrels. So you kind of get into the, I mean, they're from California, so.
Yeah, I mean, it makes
barrels
sense.
Abound.
It makes sense. Yeah, so you're talking about like with the Lambiques, right, Sal, that barrel aging, wood aging, you're not going to be using a used wine cask in that traditional method,
no,
right?
Generally not. As far as the wine aging and liquor aging barrels, yeah, that's probably
more of a new thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody somewhere, maybe way back when in France or something, threw some beer in a barrel. I wouldn't be surprised about that. But yeah, hey, there you go. There's some hardcore research we do here on the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, somebody probably somewhere way back when did that. Yeah, good stuff. So, Matt, one of the ones we've been sipping on the whole time that we haven't talked about yet is yours, man.
Yeah, this we decided to kind of kick things off when we were in the brewery with something that wouldn't contaminate, and that was our our kettle sour Goza. So this kind of defies all of the traditional methods of brewing these beers. This is something it's been around for a while. Historically, it's been done in the past, and it came to popularity within the last 5 to 6 years. And that's basically using lactobacillus, pitching the culture into the boil kettle, waiting 24 to 48 hours, reaching your pH. You're looking for, the low threes for your pH. Once you hit that, you fire up your boil kettle, boil it, kills the lactobacillus, you're good to go. No brewery contamination is possible.
Okay. Gotcha. So is that... Now, that's a typical way of making a Goza. Is that correct?
No.
Or no, that is not.
That is not. Usually, it would be... The lactobacillus would be added during fermentation.
Okay.
And you'd get that lacto culture or characteristics during fermentation, not so much during a quick run of like 48 hours.
Gotcha.
It'd be a longer term aging process.
This is delicious. You've had this beer, I know, before, Sal. What do you think about it, man?
I love the style. They're very traditional, very German styles, very old styles. One of the original exceptions to the German Reinheitsgebot, because even back then it was considered a historical style even in the 1400s.
So we're talking about the German purity laws.
They're very nice. They're tart. They're salty. They're very light, easy drinking, high carbonation. Good thirst quenching beer. Kind of like Gatorade, right? It's got that little bit of salinity to it.
Yeah,
very similar to that.
And typically you'd have coriander.
Sure.
Would be typically found this beer. We dropped that for this beer because we have a gin and tonic version. We have the watermelon version.
Right.
So we don't want that coriander kind of interfering.
Might be kind of funky.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of add a weird botanical into that, that kind of greeny thing going on. That makes sense. So thank you for it, because I wanted to touch on this because we talked about the Flanders and we've talked about, we'll probably maybe in the podcast only saying we'll talk a little bit more about the broader category of the so-called American wild ales. But in this case, we've had the Lambic, we've had some different ones, and the Goza is kind of like one that people might know as a common quote-unquote sour beer category.
Correct. And we've already had these kind of funky, you know, earthy beers so far with the Brett. This is a good example of just straight lactobacillus, a very nice, clean, tart lemonade-like sourness. Mm-hmm. So it just shows kind of the depth of this quote-unquote sour overarching type
talked
about.
That's cool. And so when we do the podcast-only stuff coming up in just a few minutes, friends, we're going to get a little further. We're going to probably taste that Pinot Noir one. And we got a special one that Sal brought that has not been approved by the TTB, so it's not for sale. We're going to taste that as well. But yeah, let's. We got a couple minutes left here before we're going to close this out. Give us some thoughts, Sal, then you, Matt, on sour beers, man. And I know we kind of told people maybe a little bit ago on the IGTV segment of some things to try. But it's a. I think hopefully we've educated people. If you didn't know, it's a big world out there, and that term is used sort of fast and loose. There's a lot of little rabbit holes that we can go down here.
Sure, absolutely. You know, people say sour beers, but sour is just a general term. Just like there's malty beers, there's hoppy beers, there's yeast forward beers. There's definitely a whole world in the quote unquote sour style itself. You know, and one of the things that just kind of really gets my goat is that when people say this newfangled sour craze, you know, clean beer is only since the 1800s. A lot of people forget that Louis Pasteur got his start in beer and making clean beer and isolating the clean yeast. Everything before the 1800s, Louis Pasteur was a little sour, was a little funky. You know, clean beer is the new trend. These are really, truly the original styles here.
Right, mm-hmm. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. And Matt, with you, share some of your thoughts. And I also think one thing I want to talk about from a taste profile perspective, a lot of these beers, I think they're just, I find them very refreshing. A lot of them will finish dry, but they're very refreshing beers. Mm-hmm. Like if you just want to get away from drinking a regular lager or something like that, this is a good beer to drink in the hot weather.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the neat thing is that the palate, you know, usually finishes pretty clean, so that sets it up for the next one. It's like, it's nothing that's actually potently powerful and is going to destroy your palate like a really bitter IPA or anything like that. But the thing that impresses me the most about these beers is the variation, not only from brewer to brewer, but from style to style, the amount of different flavors you can get and how those flavors are achieved. It's a whole science in itself, and we can get into that maybe, you know, on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think the variation of flavor, the acidities of the various kinds of acids, all of that stuff is really impressive. And it's just neat to try them and see how one compares to the next one and just explore all this huge realm of sour funk. So
there you go. We're seeing more on the market these days, more available in the States and here in Louisiana and elsewhere. Well, you guys, we've got about 40 seconds left or so before we have to close. Now, tell people where they can find Old Real Brewing. Come
absolutely.
See you, man.
We are on the North Shore. We're in Old Mandeville. We're a couple blocks off the lake. 639 Girard Street. We're across from the St. Tammany Trailhead for the St. Tammany Trace. Just to the east of the causeway.
Yep, and as I said before, if you're coming to visit New Orleans, it's across the lake. It's about 40 minutes from downtown. It is absolutely worth a trip to come over here and see what Matt's up to at Old Rail Brewing. So I'll tell people really quickly if they want to find out more about the Beer Judging Certification Program, BJCP.
So Facebook, Beer Judge Certification Program, search for it. Also Louisiana BJCP for Louisiana-specific stuff. Also www.bjcp.org.
Cool, awesome. Friends, we're going to close out the radio portion of the show here. Be sure to get the podcast, Another Shot with Noel Drinks, coming right up with Matt and Sal. So remember, friends, be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Hope you enjoy our ongoing conversation here with Matt and Sal over at Old Rail Brewing Company, exploring the world of sour beers, as it were. We're going to head right back over there in just a second here and taste through two or three more beers, talk about them, talk a little bit more about sour beers, and then I will be back with my parting shot. So here's a brief musical interlude, and then right back to Old Rail Brewing Company. Here we go. All right, everybody. Oh, hey, it's another shot with Nola Drinks. As you know, we're here at Old Rail Brewing Company here in Old Mandeville and hanging out with Matt and Sal as we do, talking beers as we do with these guys. And, we've been talking about the world of sour beers, mm-hmm. really interesting stuff, you guys, and you've been sharing some really special stuff, which I really appreciate, and kind of showing us the diversity of the world of sour beers here, which is awesome. We're going to taste through some things now, and as we are here on another shot with Nola Drinks, we can get a little more into the weeds here. I know there was something, Matt, that you were talking about that you wanted to get into, talking a little bit more about the science behind it and how there's so much variation out there.
There is. It's kind of cool. Just one thing that, you know, in reading up on this in the past, the one thing I kind of remember was the ability to alter flavor through your yeast selections. You can get into American yeast is really clean yeast. It doesn't really contribute well to brewing a sour because you want to start with a beer yeast and then you'll pitch your other cultures on top of that, your microbes. Things like acetaldehyde off flavors, which are typically something you don't want in some beers. Some beers it's acceptable. You know,
a certain level, right? It's the same thing in wine. People will call it a fault, but certain things, it to a point, it can be kind of pleasant.
Yeah. So when you're brewing these beers, you can choose like an English strain that produces a lot of acetaldehyde, and some of these microbes will consume the acetaldehyde and transform it into another flavor. So what's an off flavor in beer is actually a welcomed flavor that'll later be consumed and produce another flavor in a sour or a funky beer.
Right.
So a little bit of science there. I mean, it gets more in depth than that, but it's just kind of neat the different nuances compared to just brewing general beer per se and brewing sour funky beer.
Gotcha.
And that's where Sal was saying earlier in the show that, you know, you can geek out pretty good on this kind of stuff and get into the science. So, and you know, I wanted to mention as well, there's some forums on Facebook. I think Milk the Funk is a great forum.
Okay.
You know, if anybody's interested in learning more about sours, that's loads of information passed through there.
Okay. So. Yeah, very cool. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something here, you guys, like, Sal, I'll throw this in your direction, where some experimentation is required then, right, as you start to kind of play with these different things. You just got to kind of see what happens, right? I mean, and see what you end up with through the process of the aging and the fermentation and what you're introducing and what you're not introducing even.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And kind of piggyback off of what Matt said, we talked about how it's a very pulling, right, fight between these various bacteria and yeasts. If you taste very young lambic, it's going to be very enteric, very, frankly, disgusting.
Okay.
Putrid, baby vomit, dirty drain. A lot of those things subside. A lot of those things break down over time, where the bacteria, yeast work in conjunction with each other and create these wonderful, lovely flavors down the road.
Right. And that's what these are. And we were talking about one of the particular beers. It was a sort of best buy 2021 or drink by or recommended.
Yeah.
So these are age-worthy beers in many instances anyway.
Correct. I have a Tilquin Goose before the show when we talked about this topic. I looked in my cellar to see what I had. I had a Tilquin Goose from 2011, and it said best buy 2021. These beers are very much living, changing, aging. It's not uncommon to see 10, 20, 30-year-old best buy dates on these beers.
So you can certainly do something like if you go and get yourself a sixer of these or go buy a handful of these and open up one every couple years, and they're going to be different through this process, much like we would think about with wine in particular.
Correct.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, what should we taste first here, guys? We got three in front of us.
Okay, so I think what you have in your hand is the Supplication by Russian River.
Yes.
We tried the Consecration by Russian River earlier.
Now aged in Cabernet barrels. Yep, okay.
And so this is aged in Pinot Noir barrels, 100%, and then has cherries added. So
okay.
I think on this, you get kind of that dryness again comes back that we were familiar with in the other beers. You get that wine note, which is, I think, a little different. I mean, we're going for a different wine here, so. Mm-hmm. But I won't talk about too much. You can generate your own thoughts.
Yeah, it's great. What do you think, Sal?
It's great. It's definitely a little cleaner, a little more straightforward of a beer. Mm-hmm. The alcohol on this one is very nice.
Yes. There's it's not as hot as the Cabernet one. Yeah.
There's a nice tartness to it, and there is very much a vinous quality. Everything's harmonious. It blends together. It's a lovely beer.
I really like it. You're talking, we get that kind of sour cherry note. I find this one, the Cabernet one, I found it very, very enjoyable. It's very particular because of that sort of bitter, astringent finish that we were getting at the end. And this one, to me, demonstrates maybe a little more balance than that one does.
So on this particular beer, you get, and of course the listeners, viewers can't really sense it, but on this particular beer in the aroma up top, you get a very leathery, earthy note on it, and that's going to be the Brettanomyces in this beer at work.
Okay, gotcha.
And this one, this is a year old, so this was 2017 September.
Okay,
and then we were dealing with 3 years on the last one.
Yeah, so that's going to make some difference here too. So would it be something similar, say, with wine, where some of the fruit characteristic is going to, you know, will lay back over time?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Very much the same idea that way. Okay, great.
Yeah,
got it. So, what should we try next? Should we try this guy?
Let's do the
Inceptus.
Matt brought that Inceptus.
Yeah, sure. Let's tell us about this one, man.
Yeah, we've talked about this in previous shows. Probably, I think it might have been the last segment. So this is a wild ale from Georgia, Three Taverns Brewery. They brewed this in kind of one of the great storms of the southern winter that they had in Georgia. Everything was kind of shut down. They had some work. They put it outside. Let it kind of do what it did, and it collected basically a Georgia culture, and then they aged it in some North Georgia wine barrels, and so that's what we have. It's you can't see it, but it's a really nice. Listeners can't see it, but this is a really deep golden color. It's really nice and clear.
It's almost got a reddish tone to it, you know, a little bit of brickish tone to it too, as well. You know what I get on this, you guys, which is very funny, and I still get it. When you first poured it, it was a little more prevalent to me. Almost got, there's a nutty aroma on it, almost a peanut aroma to it, which I find very interesting.
Well, it's coming from those peanut farms
in Georgia. That makes a lot of sense, man. This is Jimmy Carter's favorite right here, friends. I was actually going to make a really bad joke when you said it picked up some of that Georgia culture. To say, do they actually have any there? But
you know, you're right about that peanut. That's pretty wild.
Isn't it funny? Way to save the show there, Sal, as I was alienating our friends in Georgia. As we're taping here, it is a Sunday.
Yeah,
here,
it is
friends.
Very nutty.
It is very nutty. Yes, indeed. Got the Falcons on the TV back here, the Dirty Birds. So, you know, there you go. it is. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't have any comment on what cost is that. I'm not sure how they made it, but there is a very definitive, peanut. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the first aroma that I picked up, and I mean, even get a little bit of that.
But
on
again,
the
pal, we talked about depth of flavor, right?
Yeah.
That these sour beers, a lot of people are like, sour. It's just this like lactic, straight sour. But I think we talked about it on the IG portion, Instagram portion, to where it, you know, leather, barnyard, petting zoo, for the more extreme, all the way to these very clean lactic flavors and aromas that come out of it. So
yeah,
it's pretty fun.
It's very fun. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So we have a Sal special beer here, and it's convenient because one of the guys sitting here is named Sal. It kind of works out that way. So what do we got here, Sal, man?
So far, we've covered all of these very particular regions, right? Peyotenland, which is a very specific region, Flanders, which is a very specific region, the Russian River Valley, which is a very specific region, these towns, these little alcoves. I bring you something from the faraway land of the village of Folsom, Louisiana. So with this particular...
Appalachian pending.
Appalachian pending. However, Folsom is a village. You got that little cool small vibe going. About 3 years ago, this is actually a Perry that I made. So just to go to show that quote-unquote sour doesn't cover just beers, this is a Perry I made, which is a cider.
Tell people. Okay, good.
Cider is made with apples. A Perry is made with pears. A buddy of mine has a what's called a sand pear trees, several of them on his farm. Climbed up the 18-foot ladder, gathered about 25 pounds, hand-crushed them all, hand juiced them all, got the juice out of it. And basically the only thing I did to ferment this particular beer was we added some of the unwashed pear skins that came off of it.
Oh, okay.
So there were no actual controlled yeast used in making this. So whatever was wild at the time went into this the fermentation. So now you've got a very kind of...
Where did you do the, fermentation outside?
This was all at my house.
Garage? In the house.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
This was at my house. Basically let it sit. This beer is, like I said, about 3 years old, give or take. I took a silver medal with this about a year and a half ago in the Take a Walk in the Wild Side competition.
Yeah.
For this. And in this you're going to get that sweetness of the pear. You're going to get a little bit of sulfur. I believe that's more from the fruit than anything.
Okay.
Over time, this has changed. The last time I had this was in February, and talking about how these beers are, Perry in this case, is a living, breathing organism. This one's got a little bit more acidic. Since the last time I had it.
Okay, I was just going to ask you how it's kind of changed over time.
Yeah, so it went from more funk to a little bit more acidic note on it.
And the fruit's kind of probably laid down a little bit also on that. Mm-hmm. Matt, what do you think, man?
I the aroma's interesting. You know, Sal and I talk about beer a lot. He knows
hard to imagine.
Yeah,
really,
yeah. Well, right. Strange. I'm not a fan of sulfur, but that's on the nose. The thing about the flavor that I pick up in this is that it's almost like a white table wine kind of finish to me.
Yep.
It's got a little sweetness. It's got that kind of white grape kind of thing
kind
going
on.
Kind
of a grapiness to it. It reminds me, and I don't want to interrupt. It almost reminds me, because there's an acid finish there, but it's not, say, as prevalent as something like a Sauvignon Blanc. We want to make that comparison. It almost kind of drinks like a Pinot Grigio to me, in a sense.
Yep.
Even 100% with sitting that. Here at the table, has changed a little bit. At first, it had to kind of off gas, but we talked about a little bit of butyric in it at first. But even just sitting here, it's you open a wine, it's kind of the same concept. It changes even within a few minutes.
Aerates a little bit.
Starting,
You know what I'm actually picking up a lot more on it too, you guys, is I'm picking the pear is coming through in the mid palate more than I was getting on the initial taste. Sal, as you said.
Yeah,
this is cool. So when is this going to be commercially available, Sal?
Whenever anyone who wants to front me about $2 million for a proper brewery,
$2 million.
Wow!
Hey, we're doing it right. We're doing it right.
You're going big.
Hey, we're doing it right. That's right.
A beta who? Well, that's really cool, you guys. I appreciate you sharing some of these really wonderful beers. Any last thoughts before we close out here today?
Well, no. Thank you. For coming and letting us do this and letting us share these beers, because I had this beer for 3 years, it's been sitting in my refrigerator, so this is a good way to get it out.
I am always happy to be that guy. Always happy to be that guy. I appreciate you sharing some of these special beers and the conversation as always, guys. It's great, a lot of fun.
Absolutely,
we'll do it again soon. We'll certainly you guys are on a regular basis as the resident beer correspondent, so we'll do it again probably in the winter months when it's truly winter. Like we were talking about last time you guys were on, it was faux fall. It's still faux fall here. Technically on the calendar, it's fall. That's a load of shit. When we actually get into the winter months, when it's cold, when we get those like 5 weeks of actual cold in the New Orleans area, we'll talk winter beers. Mm-hmm. We'll do that again.
Sounds
when it actually makes sense.
Get out there and try sour beers, guys.
Yeah, man.
It's a great style. If you're looking to take that next level, that next step out of something that's the norm, you've had too many malty beers, too many hoppy beers. Get out there and try these. It's a great way to expand your beer knowledge.
Crisp, refreshing. I think good food wines. Some of these, like your salad, in particular the pear one. I mean, this makes me think this would be just great with fish. You know, I think a lot of these will pair very nicely with fish.
Yeah.
You're talking about pork. If you maybe did like a fruit reduction kind of glaze on a pork loin or something like that, I think a lot of these beers would go really, really well that way. I think they're very food friendly and very versatile in a lot of ways that people maybe don't expect.
And we did touch on with the Lambic, the Creek, how you would drink that. And one of the things I know, some people do with the Framboise, like the Lindeman's
Framboise,
is poured over ice cream. So
I was thinking that on that that one in particular would just be just poured over some vanilla ice cream and you'd be doing just fine.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, you guys, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Sal, Matt, thank you.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, as always.
Absolutely, friends. Hey, I'm going to take a brief little musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. Come on back. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show this week. I appreciate it
as always. Hope you enjoyed that conversation there with Sal and Matt exploring the world of sour beers. You know, I love having those guys on. Their wealth of knowledge as it relates to beer is just exceptional. Understanding production, understanding why things taste the way they do, the history component of all of this. It's really, really impressive what these guys know. And, you know, we touched on this a little bit. You know, Sal is an award-winning home brewer, as well as being a highly ranked certified beer judge. Matt is also a beer judge. I would argue one of the finest, if not the finest, brewer in the state of Louisiana. That's saying something. So go check out Old Rail Brewing Company and see what Matt's up to. They only do stuff on site there. So go get a good meal and check them out. Yeah, it's worth the drive over from New Orleans if that's where you live. It's also worth making a trip over if you're coming to visit town. Go check them out. As I mentioned, friends, at the top of the show, a little programming note, we are taking a scheduled week off next week. Kind of excited about that. Going to be taping some of the show for the following week. We'll be back with a new show on the radio on Monday, October 15th. Then the podcast will be out the next day or so after that. And then we got some really cool stuff coming up, taking us through the end of the year, more or less. Here's our parting shot, friends, as we like to do. You know, tasting all these sour beers with those guys over at Old Rail, I got to taste a whole lot of stuff that I had never tasted before, which I always enjoy doing. And it's just another indicator of the large world out there, beverages included. And, you know, there's just a whole lot of beers out there. And one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting is my lovely wife, Sylvia, who was there helping me as she usually does when we tape the show. You know, Sylvia used to drink beer. She used to be cool. You know, she used to drink cheap wine. Now I think I probably helped to some degree create a monster. I mean, I'm kidding. But Sylvia's really kind of gotten away from drinking beer, and she never really drank craft beers to begin with back in the day. And, you know, doesn't really necessarily enjoy going out and getting maybe a lighter bodied beer, maybe one, and that's going to kind of be the extent of it. And she was really excited about a lot of the sour beers that we taste. You know, a lot of these things are food friendly. They're very refreshing. Lots of times, maybe they're a little higher in ABV, so they're served in smaller glasses, so you're not drinking a whole pint of beer, which for some people kind of fills you up, can be unpleasant. I totally understand that. But it's always experiences like these that get me thinking about things. And when somebody will turn around and say, you know, I don't like beer, or one of the things that I'll hear all the time, I don't like Chardonnay. To me, that's such a blanket statement that does a disservice to the big world of beverages that we have out there. There's a lot of beers out there. There's something that you might actually have never even heard of or been exposed to that you might like. In the case of Chardonnay, which I'm going to kind of harp on here a little bit, that's really unfair to the grape. Chardonnay is probably the most chameleon-like grape on the planet. It grows in cool climates. It grows in hot climates. It grows all over the world. It's a very versatile grape that is highly reflective of its terroir and also highly reflective of its production, how it's made in the cellar, how it's put together out there. So to say that you don't like Chardonnay is kind of a disservice to Chardonnay. Oftentimes I find that there are people who just don't like, say, for example, the California, so-called California style, the buttery oaky Chardonnay, but they've never had a true Burgundy, or they haven't had something that hasn't seen any wood, hasn't seen malolactic or secondary fermentation. If you're familiar with that, that's that buttery part. There's a big world out there, and I always want to encourage people to challenge themselves. And also, if you're in the business, if you're a bartender, a beverage director, a server, something along those lines, you work at a retail shop, you know, help people challenge themselves. There are different ways to do that. Certainly, you can turn people on to food pairings. For example, a really good example that I've used in the past that I like a lot is we sort of talk about Moselle style, like, you know, sweet Rieslings, right? A lot of residual sugar, very, very sweet. That is not, frankly, my favorite wine to just drink by itself. But the way that residual sugar plays with spicy food, for example, Indian food, Thai food, things like that, it's perfect because, and we don't have to go too far down this road, but the idea that residual sugar offsets a lot of the heat, and the heat offsets a lot of the residual sugar. So that Riesling doesn't taste as sweet when you're eating spicy food. And really, the spicy food is not as spicy when you're drinking something with a lot of residual sugar, like a Riesling made in that style. So that is my go-to. Okay, it's not necessarily my quote-unquote favorite wine. I hate using that term. But in that circumstance, it's perfect. And you see some of these Rieslings really shine that way. So that's a good way to turn people on is, you know, show them how a certain beverage, you know, wine or beer, whatever we're talking about, pairs with a certain food and elevates both. Something we talked about on the show last week with Chef Slade Rushing of Brennan's and their wine director, Braith Tidwell. Another good way to do it is taste people side by side on things. Or if you're, you know, exploring this stuff by yourself, And maybe, you know, you're a Chardonnay drinker. Let's say you like that California-style Chardonnay, but you want to try something a little bit different. Go to your bottle shop and get your favorite California-style Chardonnay, and then ask the retailer, say, hey, can you turn me on to something that's maybe a Burgundy or something that has little or no oak on it? Ask for an un-oak Chardonnay, even domestic. Find something in the same price point, perhaps, and we'll get to that in a second. And taste them side by side and compare and contrast. I think that's a really interesting way to challenge yourself and maybe try something new. One little side note, you know, if you go into a place, don't get mad if they don't have what you want. And I'll tell you a brief story. I was at one of my favorite bars in the French Quarter not too long ago, and a woman came in. It's not too far off Bourbon Street, and the woman came in and she wanted a Chardonnay. Well, they don't carry Chardonnay. They have a small wine list. They have a couple things that she probably would have liked. Well, and I'll get there. Probably would have liked. And, but they didn't carry a Chardonnay. So she got kind of huffy about it, and she was saying something about how she couldn't believe they didn't have Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. Well, not everybody has a massive wine list. Not everybody's going to carry Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. As a matter of fact, I wish more people wouldn't. Side note. But then the woman got up, and, you know, the bartender told her, hey, there's probably a bunch of places within spitting distance that you can go find a Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. Woman disappeared for 10 or 15 minutes, came back and ordered what the original suggestion was as an alternative to Chardonnay that was presented to her, and I can't recall exactly what it was, but a lighter bodied white wine. Okay. So when you go to a place, if they don't have exactly what you want, you know, that's fine. Either go somewhere else and find exactly what you want, or maybe be willing to put yourself in their hands and explore something new. See why they've selected what they have. Why is that wine list put together? Why is that beer list put together that way? Why do they have this bourbon over this bourbon? You know, be prepared to try something new and be prepared to ask for alternatives. And if you're in the industry, be prepared to give all alternatives. So one of the things that I'm not a huge fan of is when somebody says, well, you know, I'm trying to decide what to get here. And then you say, well, my favorite is, without asking any other questions. That doesn't work, friends, if you're in the industry. Ask them what they like. Ask them what they're used to. Ask them what they think they want. Then make a suggestion based on that. And I'll get there in a second with what I mean, a good strategy to use when you're deploying that approach. Now, certainly if somebody asks you what your favorite is, then tell them, honestly, my favorite is. But make sure that you have this in some sort of context with what it is that they like. Now, here's where I'm going to go with this. There's a rule that I generally follow and what I teach when I do wine classes and cocktail education, or when I do, I used to do a lot of staff training for tasting room staffs out in California, and I call it the 1 degree rule. Now, what do I mean by that? It's very difficult, and I think sometimes dangerous, to try and suggest something to someone that is more than 1 degree away from what it is that they're used to, what it is that they like, and what it is that they know. And that works in two different categories, both price and style. So for example, you're not going to get someone to go from a California Chardonnay, that California style buttery oaky Chardonnay that they always buy for $15, to say something like a highly tannic, expensive bottle of Italian Barolo. Okay, one, you're pushing them way away from that 1 degree of what a California Chardonnay style wine tastes like. And certainly the $15 price point is thrown out the window when you're talking about an $80 bottle of Barolo. That's going too far. That's several degrees of separation. So keep it 1 degree of separation. So maybe if they are a California Chardonnay style drinker, maybe suggest a nice South African Chenin Blanc. You're probably going to have something on your list that's a nice white wine that's going to work that way. Maybe find something that's also similar in price. That South African Chenin Blanc, you can find a lot of nice ones for right around $15 US. They're not too distant flavor-wise in a lot of ways, for example. And you can certainly find ones out there that have a little bit of oak on them, a little bit of wood on them. So if you're looking to explore this yourself and you go to a retailer, say, hey, I want to try something new. I normally like California Chardonnay. Do you have any South African Chenin Blanc? Maybe something with a touch of wood on it. And they can probably help you out. If not, they should be able to get that wine, I think. That's a side note because we're involved with South African Wine Week. But anyway, that I think is how I go about, not that is how I go about it, this 1 degree rule, as I call it. So give people alternatives that are, maybe you can bump them up a little bit in price. So maybe you can get them to go from $15 to $20 or $22, or maybe you can get them to go from Chardonnay to a Sauvignon Blanc or to a Chenin Blanc. Asking people to go way across the spectrum in price and or style is just way too much. I think if you're in the industry, that's your job to be a good tour guide to understand that dynamic and help them get there. Hey, if you're a guest or if you're out there and you're looking to explore something new and you want to jump way out the window and go really far away from what you like, more power to you and rock and roll, let's do it. But oftentimes people are very hesitant to make a big step. So take a baby step, just something incrementally away from what it is that they like. And for you, if you're out there exploring that stuff too, hey, that's a great way to find something new. Don't go too far afield. Stay close to home. One little step, to the right, to the left. There you go. Maybe you'll find something that really floats your boat. Friends, ultimately, just remember to drink something that you like. That's really what it comes down to, doesn't it? Friends, that's our parting shot. We'll be back with a new show in a couple weeks. Here's to you.
All these sciences, all these sinners we've tried.